But sitting there smoking a pipe I had made was just a wonderful experience. And I don't know that I can say, oh, I'm going to be a pipe maker at that point. But it was sort of like I couldn't not pursue it at that point. It was so much fun to do it.
That is tobacco pipe artisan Scott Thiele. This week is the story of how the combination of skills of a woodworker and the enjoyment of a good pipe smoke led to the pursuit of the creative process. Included in this episode is an intriguing family story about how Scott's tobacco pipe collection helped launch his oldest son's music career and how that son's music ability contributed to Scott's pipe making endeavor. This is Something From Nothing. I'm Justin Lewis. Stay tuned. Support for Something From Nothing comes from Taylor Group PLLC at 15th and Jefferson in Paducah. For both businesses and individuals, Taylor Group works with clients to achieve financial viability in the present while being proactive for future goals. More about their services at taylorgroupplc.com. A community-minded accounting firm, they also have an appreciation for the creative process and the individuals involved. We settled into his shop, which is a converted garage. Tools for making his pipes were along the wall and in an island in the middle of the shop. He had a small collection on display on his desk in the corner. We pulled up a couple of chairs, and he told me all about his passion for tobacco pipes, which he succinctly defined this way.
It's much more than a hobby. It wouldn't be quite a living.
Scott's pipe affinity started early. He said he first started smoking a pipe when he was a teenager. He took a little break while he was raising his three sons, and it was the middle son that kind of drew him back into it in the early 2000s, around 2003 or 4. They were able to bond over it, and his son, he reintroduced Scott to the scene. Eventually, Scott decided to try his hand at making his own pipe.
I was sitting in my Morris chair in the living room there, late fall of 2005.
And he was smoking a pipe, one of the tobaccos that has been approved for inside the house smoking, by the way. Some of them are a little too negatively scented for his lovely wife, Kathy's taste. So anyways, he was examining the pipe and considered what it would be like to make his own pipe. He thought about the skills he already possessed and thought,
I am going to do this. I'm totally going to do this. Back then, I used to get a little money from my mom at Christmas time, and I thought, if she sends me a little money, I'm going to buy some briar and a couple little specialty tools that I didn't already have, and I'm going to do it. And sure enough, I got a little money, and that kind of spurred me on. I bought this book, kind of a little how-to book, and the materials and a couple of tools.
Between this book,
Pimo's book on how to craft a briar pipe at home,
and an internet forum he had joined, Scott had what he needed to make his first pipe. It also didn't hurt. Scott had years of experience woodworking. This pipe makers forum he joined had a bunch of helpful information. Scott said the members were very open and were not intending to be exclusive, but you had to prove your worth.
You know, not just a duffer that was going to make a bunch of ugly stuff.
Well, Scott is not in the habit of making ugly stuff, although his first pipe, in his words, was terribly ugly, but beautiful in his eyes. Scott, tell me more about that maiden voyage into making a pipe.
It probably took me about 2 weeks working, quite a bit, like probably a couple of days would have been like maybe 9 or 10 hours worth of fiddling around with it. And then a whole bunch of little snippets of time also. It took a long time, especially, you know, having already had the stem kind of partially made when I started the stem. Now I make stems from scratch, just using rod stock. But, that should have shortened that process considerably, but it really didn't. And then I didn't have any terrible disasters making that pipe. Like, I pretty much was able to get a pipe out of my first attempt. There were a lot of little problems, and then troubleshooting those and coming up with solutions along the way. And asking for advice on this forum a couple of times. But it was, by and large, I had a pretty good skill set going into it. You know, I was quite familiar with how tools work and the process of drilling wood and just different things to look out for. So I had a little bit of a leg up there, but it's very different than anything I had done before.
So he was hooked. After the first purchase of supplies and wood, of course he needed to restock, so he ordered a batch from this guy in Italy, who he had contacted directly over email. Scott was so determined to get this Italian briar, he overcame quite a language barrier. Eventually, with Google Translator and a couple of actual fluent translators, he made the order. After the first batch, Scott wanted to increase his order from 20 to 100. But first, Scott needed to find the extra funds to get started on this. Keep in mind, he wasn't selling the pipes yet, just was getting into making them. And Scott had a clever idea on how to get money for his new hobby of making pipes. And it was related to his early collection of pipes.
My original pipe collection had some pretty valuable pipes in it. When I had not been smoking as much, and almost not at all for a couple of years, was also coincided with when Chris was about 8 or 9 years old, and we were starting to play around with recording some music. I was playing with them as a duo. We hadn't started Nickel Creek yet, so it must have been around, he must have been around 7. But we were messing around with studio stuff, and I wanted to put together a little studio. So I took my original pipe collection and I sold it, and I bought I used it to buy a couple of microphones and some other gear, along with some other money I got together. So fast forward now to when I'm trying to come up with money to buy Briar. I've still got a couple of the old microphones from that studio. We hadn't used them for years. Chris obviously, had access to all kinds of wonderful places to record music at that point. So I decided, well, I'm going to sell these two old microphones. And sure enough, one of them ended up being worth a considerable amount of money, and another one a little bit, and then a couple other little pieces of gear that I had laying around still. So I sold those, and that, in large part, paid for that larger order of Briar, right? So this little pocket of investment went from Briar in my original pipe collection into studio gear, and then it went back into Briar.
Scott was sure to add for the record, although he wishes he could get some of those early pipes back in his possession, it was the right decision to spend the money on the recording gear. It was a very valuable addition to the now world-renowned musician. As you can tell, Scott is creative-minded in general. With his skills in woodworking, he has put his powers together to make some brilliant pieces. He told me more about the details on the creative process. He said it can actually go one of two ways. The first being...
I drill the pipe before doing the shaping of the pipe. And then I kind of shape the pipe once the main holes are already established. Certain shapes lend themselves to that approach. More traditional shapes, like you would associate with sort of a classic looking pipe from England, or those kind of classic shapes tend to lend themselves a little bit more to that approach.
And the other approach that Scott explained to me is shaping the briar before drilling the holes.
And I really love that process. That tends to be to really facilitate pipes that follow the shape of the pipe follows the grain in the wood really closely. So as you're shaping, you can be looking at the grain and kind of matching the shape to go along with the grain as it's unfolding in your work, without committing to where the holes in the pipe are going to be yet. So you have a lot of flexibility as you're shaping. So that would be shaping first and then drilling afterwards, after the bulk of the shaping is done.
Scott went on to discuss how he would choose which of the two styles to use when making the pipe.
I want to make a certain shape of pipe, and that would dictate then how that's going to go.
Or,
hey, this is an interesting piece of briar. I wonder how I can get the best pipe out of this particular piece of briar. And so I might look at it, and that'll often be the way one of the shaping first pipe starts, is I'll just go, wow, that's really a beautiful piece of wood, and then the grain is going a certain direction, and then you can kind of start to conceive what shape of pipe might be able to utilize that grain the best.
Scott said the part for him that was the most fun was
that initial phase. It's just so much fun. It's absolutely mesmerizing to watch the wood change and take shape and have that hopefully match up something you've kind of already got going on in your head, or conversely, matching your head to what's going to be happening in the pipe. Because it's not like you don't have the ability to conceive of what you had originally thought once you get into the material.
After the initial stage of forming the pipe, it needs finishing.
You are also fitting a stem. So you're taking a stem, it's basically think of like a rod of hard rubber, which is, we call it ebonite, but it's basically hard rubber. And I take that and determine how I'm going to match the stem to the pipe. A lot of times there's a little bit of shaping left to do on the pipe when I put the stem very roughly shaped onto the pipe and then shape them together. That would be a very common way to proceed from that point.
Then you would sand down markings like any other woodworking project. Decide on smooth or sandblasted. On a smooth pipe,
it has to have really beautiful grain figure in it. Hopefully that makes aesthetic sense with your shape. And it can't have too many distracting little flaws in the briar itself. So if that's quite subtle, you can still get away with a smooth pipe and not have it be super distracting to your eye as you're admiring the pipe. But if there's anything significant there, then you really can't get a smooth pipe out of it anymore.
And that's when the option is sandblasted.
Personally, I think sandblasted pipes are every bit as beautiful.
But if you were going to sell them, the market is in smooth pipes. And Scott does sell these practical pieces of art. It was on a snowy weekend in February of 2007, about a year after he had started making them. Scott said he traveled to St. Louis for his first pipe show, and while he was there, he talked to several pipe makers, examining their pipes, holding what he said was the most beautiful work he had handled. Then he finally worked up the gumption to show his work to a Danish maker, who has many years of experience.
He looked at several of my pipes and pointed out different things I could do that would improve them aesthetically. He was quite encouraging about the mechanics of it. You know, the drilling was accurate, and that part was, he was quite affirming in that. And, you know, and other things, he was just pretty honest, like, this is actually pretty ugly, you know, in a certain yeah. Danish accent. And he said, but this one, see how you've done this here, you know, in terms of grace, more graceful line. He said, this is more what you want to do, you know. And, you know, the end result of talking to him and then several other pipe collectors that aren't, you know, not pipe makers, but collectors said, hey, are you selling any of these? You know, could I buy one? I go, well, no, I'm not really selling them yet. And he goes, well, you should think about that. You know, I'd be really interested if you were going to try and sell one.
A hobby that was once smoking, then collecting, took another step into selling. Scott truly has created something from nothing. All Scott's pipes are stamped with an S.E. Thiele. You can pick one out for yourself by going to his website, sethielepipes.com. Support for this season of Something from Nothing comes from Paducah's Taylor Group, PLLC, a community-minded accounting firm proud to support the creative process. Offering small business consultation, tax services, retirement planning, and more, Taylor Group works to help clients achieve financial viability. There's more about their services online at taylorgroupplc.com. Special thanks to Scott and his lovely wife, Kathy, for letting me have a couple hours of their Saturday afternoon. I was sure to leave before that week's edition of Live From Here.
And we are live from here at the Detroit Opera House! And here's your host, Chris Thiele!
Ahoy! More episodes of Something From Nothing are available on NPR One, WKMS.org, and the podcast app. While you're there, if you wouldn't mind leaving me a review, I'd highly appreciate it. On this episode, editorial assistance was provided by Stacy Reason, produced by me, your host, Justin Lewis. Thanks for listening.